legendary game system.
Yes.
Whereas there is a dedicated, complicated Firefly board game.
Okay.
And that is what I have acquired. Oh, we each get our own.
Yeah, yeah. We're drinking leftovers tonight.
That's fine.
We do a sake meetup, as probably everyone listening knows. Yeah. Probably was there.
And or has been to.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is Leftover Man Can. This is a Namagenshu. It's unpasteurized, it's got a little bit of color to it, maybe. No, not really.
Very, very small amount.
It's hard to tell in these cups.
I think there's a little bit of very slight amber to it. Yeah, yeah.
So that means it hasn't been charcoal filtered all the way. Because the charcoal filtering will take away the natural amber coloring and then give you the clear sake. And it's also cask strength. So
yes, it is.
That's the Genshu part. And
I like how you punch the
Genshu. That's
the air.
You have to, though. Genshu.
Mm. Genshu. Genshu. Yeah, you can't really say it and mean it without punching something.
Yes.
You're right.
Genshu sounds like it. It's got a good sound to it, a good heft. It's a good
I agree. Here, let's
strong word.
Let's you move back a bit. My voice is really weak. I taught 4 classes today, so I'm going to have to eat this mic a bit more than usual.
All right. So, yes, cask strength. They usually add a little bit of water to sake to bring down the alcohol content. Not a lot. This is about 18 to 19%. Usually, sakes are around 15%. It's strong for a sake.
Yeah.
And sake is strong for a wine. So, this would be like a really strong wine.
Like port?
I don't know.
No, because I don't know how strong port is, to be honest.
I've lost my connection with wine. I've cut it off.
So far away.
Yeah. I know what port wine sort of is, but not really.
it's delicious. Or at least the tawny stuff is. I don't know. I think.
So, kanpai.
Kanpai. Hi, we are buddies in space. You are?
S. Michael Smith. You are?
M. Michael Carassi.
I'm taking my shirt off.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, getting already.
Getting
bam.
Comfy. Getting comfortable. Comfortable.
I think I'm going to be okay. I don't think the nausea from sake meetup night has returned.
Well, I hope not. Give it a little time, though.
Yeah.
Take it easy. Take it nice and slow.
Anything will be slower than how I drank on Saturday night.
Yeah. So we got a little project after this.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Man can for a manly couple of dudes doing some manly stuff.
Yeah.
Ain't much more manly than changing tires on a car.
Changing tires on a car.
Like your
damn selves.
Damn selves. Because you shame me out of having the car dealer do it again.
There's no need. It's not hard. It's one of the easiest things you can do. I mean,
well, you have all the tools, so it's not hard if you're helping.
Yeah, you can go down to Harbor Freight. You can have all the tools.
It involves money. And I tried to buy a torque wrench, and they were like, oh, what kind do you need? I'm like... And then I just ran away. I just ran out of there. I hung my head in shame. Actually, I threw my arms up and said, oh, no, no!
You did the Kermit run.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm a complicated life and it interferes with your simple existence.
But yeah, you just need a torque wrench that's in the general range. And if I'm...
general range?
Unless I'm incorrect, the Volkswagen standard lug... bolt torque is 88 foot-pounds.
I think I'm a little turned on that you knew that. I'm not gonna lie. It's pretty manly, bro.
I could be wrong, but I think it's 88. Pretty sure it's 88. So yeah, you just need a torque wrench that's got that in the range. You know.
So okay, explain torque wrenches to me. I'm gonna be honest. You explained them once, and so I need to buy a torque wrench for my lawnmower to change the. I have a new spark plug.
Okay.
I have not put it on in a year because I don't know what the fuck to do with a torque wrench.
Yeah, you get a torque wrench has there are different ones that you can get. You don't want to get the shitty old kind because it's really it's hard to use accurately. The shitty old kind is just like it's a socket wrench basically mm-hmm. on a long handle mm-hmm. on a long arm or whatever. And it's got like a little like a needle on it and like a little kind of built-in sort of dial range. And so as you pull the wrench and put pressure on the wrench,
you have to watch it.
You have to like look at the needle and see where the needle's going.
Huh.
Because as you're flexing the metal of the handle, the part with the needle doesn't flex, so it stays pointing in one direction.
Telling you how many pounds per square inch, whatever.
But it's really hard to use that kind accurately.
So sounds like it.
You get one of the newer ones like I have, which isn't really that new, but
the innovation of 20 years ago.
Yeah, and I probably need to get mine recalibrated or just get a new one. So what it does on the one I have, and most of the decent ones, is you just basically twist the handle because there's like a little there are marks along the handle, and as you twist the grip part, it just sort of ratchets it up. And there's like marks for every different, you know, like
torque,
10, 20, 30, 40. Yeah. So as you rotate it, it creeps up and the torque increases. Okay. So you just basically dial in the torque that you want.
So then you're using it and then it just stops when it gets to the torque?
It clicks. Ah. You get to the right, you hit that torque amount and it goes clunk.
Okay.
And you're just, like, okay, stop. I stop.
I'm done.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're really easy to use. The thing that you need to remember, and which why I haven't done every single time, is that when you're done with it, you're supposed to ratchet it all the way back down to zero.
Oh.
So it doesn't get, I guess, doesn't lose tension that way.
Torquey?
Yeah. So, yeah, I may have screwed that up once or twice and let it sit too long. So I probably need to get mine recalibrated.
Oh, great. So the one we were using may have the incorrect amount of torque.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to fuck up your wheels completely.
Damn it. God damn it.
But you'll probably be fine. I'm pretty sure they won't fall off.
Okay.
Reasonably sure.
Well, it's the winter. I'm not really going that fast.
Yeah.
80? I'll take 80%.
Yeah, 80%.
It's probably still safer than driving around in all-season radials.
Yeah.
Because that has not felt good.
And the problem that... a problem.
Tell me about these issues and problems.
When you take your car to your average drive-through auto shop, you
know, I go to like the dealer,
But dealer Quick Lube maybe a little bit better. Depends on the dealer. But like a Quick Lube or like the Sears or Jiffy or Kmart or Walmart or whatever. Yeah. Most of the time, those people don't give a shit what the torque rating is for your wheels and your nuts or bolts there. They have their, the power.
The pneumatic.
Driver. Yeah. And they just snug it on there. And usually that means it's way, way over tight.
Is that why it's always such a pain in the ass to try to get off?
Yes.
Okay.
If somebody other than someone who's like, I'm going to dial in the correct torque and do. If it's not done that way, then yeah, it's usually going to be a lot harder to get off.
Okay, that makes sense.
So, and that was a really big problem for me, you know, several years ago, the last time I had that done at a Monroe muffler, whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
Not to say anything bad about Monroe muffler. I'm just using that generically. It probably wasn't that. It was probably Goodyear.
It was Midas
Monroe. Wherever it was. They put my wheels on, and then when it came time to take them off, I had like a regular, just like socket set, and I was just getting nowhere with that. And I'd like stand on it.
Yeah.
So I had to get basically a 2 foot long,
like a breaker bar.
Yeah. Breaker bar socket.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really nice. Yeah. No, nobody should be without one of those.
Just for sheer intimidation factor.
Yeah, yeah. But it's much easier to get them off. So if a place is doing it the right way, they'll have the gun set on kind of a lower torque setting, and they'll zip them in and then have an actual torque wrench and then finish it off with that.
Gotcha.
But hardly anybody does that.
It's a shame.
Bastards. So there you go. There's your little man advice for the day.
Yeah, man advice.
Not necessarily man advice.
Well, you didn't mansplain.
Car advice. There. A non-gender specific car advice.
I'll edit all that out. Say that again.
Your non-gender specific.
No, there's your.
There's your car advice.
Done. See, it wasn't that hard. I'm not gonna edit that out. I had my first ever audio engineer recording an audiobook experience recently.
Recording it? Mm-hmm. You mean recording for someone else?
Yes, as an audio engineer.
Okay. So you were the guy behind the plexiglass, you know, like with headphones on and pointing at the person.
I did all of that. There was just no plexiglass. Yeah. So basically I sat right there behind you and kind of went like this. 3, 2, 1, and then pointed at him.
So how did that go? Was that fun?
It sounds really good. Like the finished product, I was very careful with my capture. So, you know, mm-hmm. I've learned a lot. So it sounds really good. Fun? My actor needed a little bit of work.
Okay. Do you need to get into this, or are you afraid of saying anything that you don't want
to
say?
I doubt he listens to this. No, it's just, and I think, you know, I think this is a good story for any actor. I think it is very easy to underestimate how much effort goes into voice acting. I think people think you just show up. It's like, oh, it's all my voice, so I'm just going to do this and walk out. And you can tell when an actor does that because you can tell they phoned it in. So he made a very standard, I mean, he's not a voice actor.
Although it is not super difficult once somebody gets used to doing it.
Well, yeah, but the problem is that most actors who do voice acting don't do it a lot.
Yeah.
If you're a voice actor, like that's your job, then you're amazing at it.
Mm-hmm.
Because all it takes is about 3 or 4 times and you're like, oh, I get this. But he didn't do any acting preparation. So we were trying to do it all in one day. It was kind of a crazy plan. So he came in and he took the train in. He didn't rest on the train. He was tired. Like, it was brutal trying to get through even, like, 2 paragraphs the first night. I was like, we're waking up at 6 a.m. tomorrow. You're an early riser because he's older. Let's do this again tomorrow. But what he didn't do was he didn't do any acting preparation. So he didn't rehearse it because it's his memoir. So I think he thought, like, well, it's my book. I know it. But it doesn't.
You would think that.
But it doesn't work like that. It's still acting. It's like trying to do a professional quality acting gig requires effort. So, I mean, I'm listening to my direction as I'm editing because you can hear me talking. And it's like, I'm like, wow, it was kind of mean of me, but it was true. He loved it. He's like, you're a really good director because this is all really good notes. But we were like struggling to find. So I had him do beats, which any actor will tell you is like the first thing you do for script work is you find the beats.
Yeah.
And you do that with voice acting too,
mm-hmm.
especially something emotional and, you know, personal. He hadn't done any of that. So I like was telling him, okay, well, let's divide up the next couple of lines into beats. Let's figure this out. What are you actually saying here? You know, not what are the words, what is motivating you to say this? Is this a realization? Okay, let's try that again. So it was really cool. So it turns out I'm very, very good at directing even an unprepared actor when it comes to voice acting.
Yeah.
Because I'm bossy as fuck. No,
it's
that's not it, actually. But
well, it's interesting. Because a lot of times authors aren't all that great at reading their own stuff.
Oh, God, no.
That's a pretty common theme out there.
And most of the time, authors aren't actors, and this is not the case. But it's still, voice acting is a different animal.
Yeah. One example that probably a lot of people have heard is the Poe song, Hey Pretty, with
her brother.
Her brother.
Yep. I still love that track, though.
No, it's good. Yeah, it's a great track, but his reading is just so stiff.
Yep.
And it's like he's not really connecting with
his own,
you know, the words.
Yeah.
I mean, it works in the context of the
song. That is from House of Leaves, which is one of the most incredible books ever written by man. And yet it's like, you're just reading a boring part of the book, not well.
It doesn't sound like it's his own words.
I think it's actually a lot easier for someone who, the person who didn't write it to act it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, that has been my experience.
Well, I mean, obviously that's a skill.
There is a skill aspect to it, but mm-hmm. I think that it's like the dreaded actor-director thing. Like, it is extremely extra difficult to pull that off from what I've seen. Very few people can actually do it. That's why someone like Ben Affleck's kind of surprising that he's not bad.
You mean act and direct at the same time?
Yeah, direct yourself.
Yeah.
Basically, self-direction is incredibly difficult, requires a whole other skill set that you have to use in conjunction with your acting.
Yes.
You know, like, I know I'm not good at it at all. I've
discovered that.
I've tried.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all the stuff for Jason with the improv stuff, I'm like, I did not prepare for this correctly. I did not really go at this in a way that was, you know, really as dedicated as it needed to be, because it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
That's why I don't like doing solo stuff. This is really not my bag. I mean, none of it's my bag anymore. But anyway, but what it is, and this, I have spent hundreds of hours between work and this podcast. So I really have honed my editing skills and audio engineer stuff to the point where I can, you know, hone in on a sentence and play with the levels to get it to sound correct, even though we were shifting distances from the mic. You know, there's a lot of technique. But what I know is what it should sound like to be believable. Not, it doesn't need to match what's in my head, but I know what it sounds like if it doesn't sound honest.
Yes.
And so that's what I kept giving him direction for. So there's direction like, you say there's so much joy in this. Like, those are the words you're saying. There's
so much joy in this.
And I said to him, there's no joy in what you just said. You need to find the joy in that sentence, because there's, I don't believe you.
There's so much joy in this?
Going up at the end makes it a question.
There's so much joy in this.
That's better, but you sound sarcastic.
There's so much joy in this.
I like the pause. I think that's impactful. You still don't sound sincere, though.
There's so much joy in this.
That was forced. I said that a couple times, too.
I give up. There's so much joy in this.
It wasn't bad. But yeah, so it was a lot of every single line I dissected, and really we would play with it and get given direction until we found it. So it was a cool experience. So I'm cutting together the finished master of just this one tiny chapter. Gonna, you know, let them listen to it, and it's kind of a proof and concept.
Mm-hmm.
So I was saying, you know, we could do our own audiobook for a lot less than paying someone to do it. I mean, you pay me, but I wouldn't charge you that much.
Yeah. I mean, have you do the voice?
No, him do the voice, me do all the audio engineer work.
Okay.
To pay like an actor and an audio engineer to do it professionally is thousands and thousands of dollars.
Oh yeah, right. So it's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. He's still gonna pay me a good amount if we do it, but. So it was an interesting learning experience.
All right.
Well, it was a confirmation. Like, oh, I do know what I'm doing. Because it's the finished product, after a lot of work for very few pages, sounds really good.
Well, good.
So, yeah.
Congratulations.
Flexing that extra skill.
Yeah. So this is coming out right at the end of the year, right?
Yeah. I hope everyone had a great holiday of your choosing.
Yes. Or not.
Or
if, well, you choose, if you chose no holiday,
that's a holiday of your choosing.
There you go.
The null holiday.
The nuncracker.
Happy Shaka. Happy Devourer of Worlds. You know, whatever.
And we're going into the about to go into the new year.
That's right. Tonight is New Year's Eve when you're listening to this podcast.
If you are listening to it hot off the press.
Yes. Or tomorrow.
Okay.
It's almost New Year's Eve at the time of the publication of the podcast.
So so we had a good Christmas. We had a great Christmas, didn't we?
Of course we had an amazing Christmas, I said in the future.
The stuff that you got me was just amazing.
It was gonzo bananas.
I was humbled by the gifts that I received.
You don't even know what you're saying. You have no idea how accurate that is.
You were, I think, a little bit bemused by what we gave you. Somewhat bemused.
Now it just sounds like it's insulting.
No, that's what we were going for, by the way. That's
bemused.
Yes.
Okay. Not aroused, just bemused.
I'd hope you weren't aroused by this.
Okay.
But it's possible, right. You know.
Yeah, it's their own, right?
Nothing's outside the realm of possibility. So we're getting ready for our New Year's Eve party, I guess.
Tradition.
Sort of not really a party.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a party. It's like a gathering. Get together and basically play cards against humanity.
Anybody who doesn't have anything better to do that we know. Yeah.
Which has become our excuse to not make plans. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
Like having this every year kind of just becomes a, well, if we don't plan anything else, then we have this. We don't have to get a babysitter.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that is way easier than doing anything else.
It becomes more and more a, can I stay awake sort of thing as you get older?
No shit, dude. God dang. It's struggle is real. Shit. I'm always reminded of what Anthony Kiedis, lead singer of the Chili Peppers, said in his autobiography, Scar Tissue. Great read.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
This is not a joke. It's a legitimate thing. Very, very good read. I mean, the guy, motherfucker, had a crazy fucking life.
I'll buy that.
But he kind of randomly says, he's talking about like kind of at the height of the drug addiction and, you know, all the fame, like kind of when just shit was just crazy all around for him. And he goes, you know, I kept making this mistake. If New Year's Eve is impossible to live up to. So he's like, the bigger the plans you make, the more it will fail. He said, the only good New Year's Eve I've ever had are the simpler ones, where I'm like with a couple of friends that I want to be with, just chilling out and welcoming the new year in. He's like, that is how you do the New Year's.
All right, and that's how we've been doing it.
That is how we've been doing it. I've done crazy, like, Times
you
Square.
You did Times fucking
but
not, Square.
But we did it, like, fucking Donald Trump style.
Yeah, you cheated on that.
We were in a law firm 60 floors up, looking down at all the motherfuckers in the cold while we were drinking cocktails and eating canapes. I mean, you know, we did it right, Mike. You know what? It wasn't that bad.
No, I don't think I've ever done the... I never did the actual Times Square New Year's. That really holds no attraction to me.
I will never do the actual for 12 hours in the cold and not be able to pee Times Square.
Yeah,
that sounds horrendous.
Be able to pee, not be able to go anywhere. You just basically are stuck standing in place.
The press of bodies
for hours.
Keeps you in place. I've walked through Times Square after everyone leaves. Oh my God, it looks scary. And it looks like you really want to watch where you're putting your feet. Yeah.
Because some people, you know, when you got to go, you got to go.
Well, yeah. Did I ever tell you what the cops did when we were walking through there?
Probably, but tell it again. Tell us the story again,
so many weird
Dad.
Cop stories about New York City. I don't remember if it was the first year or the second year we did the law firm thing, my buddy's law firm. But, we you know, Erica would make all these brownies and stuff. We bring all this food. So we were walking. We were leaving. So we're walking through Times Square, and there were just cops everywhere, because it's Times Square on New Year's Eve. And they weren't cleaning up. They were just kind of dispersing the crowd. So we're just trying to get to the subway to get home, and Erica had this like, giant tin of brownies and cookies. So like one of the cops comes up to us, and he goes, hey, can I have a cookie? And Erica's like, yeah, sure. And he's like, this isn't a magic cookie, right? And she's like, no, officer, it's not a magic cookie. And he goes, oh, because I would really like it if it were a magic cookie. So then, like, we're walking about 50 feet away. Some other cop goes, hey, Erica, can I have a cookie? And we're like, did that dude hear me say her name and radioed this guy? I was like, wow, the cops are fucking with us right now, trying to get my wife's baked goods. Something about this makes perfect sense to me.
To be fair, they've probably been out there without food for a while.
I'm telling you, it made perfect sense to me.
Yeah. So, do we have any reminiscence about the past year? Anything we're looking forward to? What are our big takeaways? Anything?
So I shake my head and
where
sigh.
Do we go, man? What are we doing with this?
Game over, man. Game over.
But it's not.
Is the vote over?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's done.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's I assumed.
Done. Yeah, technically it was done like around 3 o'clock or so this afternoon.
Okay. We're referring across the Electoral College vote.
Oh, God. We're talking politics
now.
Nope.
I'm just explaining what we're referring to. Okay. That is all. Our rule is still somewhat in effect.
My pimp hand was getting ready there.
Yeah, you do owe me one. I did get you pretty good two episodes ago.
Yeah.
Had a hand-shaped slap on your face for days. I don't know. It's kind of tempting to say it was a really shitty year. I know it's been kind of a running joke, but maybe not. I don't know. On a personal level, not really.
Not really shitty.
Not really shitty on a personal level. How about you?
On a personal level, no. Not terrible. No. I mean, you know, certainly there are some low points. But you know, in my personal timeline, doing all right. It was not a bad year. Any high points then?
I think I hit like my most in shape, like physically fit state. Like possibly ever. So that was cool.
Yeah. I didn't get that to that.
Oh, we're competing, right? I'm trying to make you feel shitty about yourself. Isn't that what we're doing?
Well, you win that round.
Yeah. My son has become a complete asshole and it's hilarious. So that's a good and it's a positive and a negative.
Have we talked about this, the three-nager?
I think so, probably. Yeah. So I was talking to a daycare yesterday. I was talking to his next teacher after he moves up to the threes room.
Okay. So this is a teacher that's going to have him?
Yeah. Well, she kind of already did. And then she herself was in the twos room and then she moved up to fill a vacancy.
Okay.
With another teacher. So I don't know. They rejiggered. So she was like, yeah, all my kids are teenagers. And I'm like, yeah, Simon's a teenager. And she goes, I don't think Simon's a teenager like this. And I'm like, what do you mean? And she goes, well, they regularly tell me that they hate me. I'm like, wow. Yeah, okay. Simon hasn't gotten that far yet. No, and then she goes, there are parents who come in and drop their kids off and they have these looks of just abject horror. And I asked them what's wrong. And they say, you know, like little Johnny said some really awful stuff to me just now.
do they drop the kid off and then they go like, I'm so sorry. we are leaving him with you. I'm so sorry.
I've done that, so I'm sure they're doing that. Because when your kid's tired, you're like, my kid's a fucking dick right now. I'm sorry. I'm not going to say it like that. So yeah, I'm sure they have. But yeah, so Eric and I are like, is he going to get worse? Or are we actually lucky, as awful as he seems to be to us? Like, he just hits me now. He just like will either like run at me full force and try to knock me over out of nowhere, or he'll just hit me the minute he gets even remotely upset. And I'm like, dude, what the fuck? Like, why are you being such an asshole?
What do you do to that? What do you do with that?
Well, you don't spank.
Yeah.
You don't hit back. You know, hitting in anger.
Because I mean, you could, and that would just end it right then. Be like, boom, you're not gonna do that again, are you? I'm joking. Okay. I'm joking.
Well, no, there's many generations. Because
you were like mulling that over, like, well,
how do I explain to Smike how wrong he is? Well, no, like, so my mom is old school, so she's like, why don't you just smack him? I'm like, I don't know if you understand how lucky you were with us, Mom. yeah. So the most physical thing I've done was actually very recently, because he actually punched me in the mouth out of anger.
He punched you in the mouth.
He's not like he didn't get a good.
Not an accident. Just no.
He pulled back. I said something to. I like told him no to something that was idiotic for him to do, like no, you cannot run around the parking lot or something like that. And he like pulled back and just fucking socked me in the jaw.
Wow.
But he had a glove on and it was very ineffectual. Okay. So you weren't actually
hurt.
No, like I was upset that he had done that, but I wasn't hurt and I wasn't angry. So I did grab by the cheeks like that.
Yeah.
And I like held him. So he looked at me. I said, you cannot hit daddy like that. And Eric is like, don't hit daddy. That's bad. And I held him just long enough for him to be upset because I was confining him.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I let him go.
How about you don't hit anyone like that? I mean, it's great that you're telling him not to do anything to you.
But he only hits me. He doesn't hit anyone else but me. So let's start with the war battle that's, you know, kind of on the forefront. And then we'll worry about the rest of the war after that battle's won. All right, let's just...
I'm imagining, like, RoboCop-type instructions in his mind. Like, do not harm Mom and Dad.
He's not... I'm not going to use the universal law of robotics on him. Jesus Christ.
I don't know. I probably would.
He's the thing is that he is a very... Like, I've seen
this is why
kids.
I'm not a parent, by the way.
I've seen other kids his age. He's a very good kid. So we're kind of like focusing on just sort of addressing the really specific shit that he's doing.
So when you say that, you mean he's like, he doesn't like try to beat the crap out of other kids.
Yeah, I don't think he's Macaulay Culkin in The Good Son.
Okay. I haven't seen that.
Yeah, Macaulay Culkin.
I don't think I need to, honestly.
No. No, it scared a lot of people. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to explain. I don't know. If you don't know kids particularly well at that age, they're so... Erica found a great quote. Some psychologist said, it's a really good thing that children do not have the strength of adults, because all children at that age are sociopaths. They just don't have... They have yet to develop a moral compass.
I buy that.
So, yeah, he's still strong enough. But speaking of terrified of things, I'm now terrified of Darth Vader.
Of Darth Vader?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is this a Rogue One reference?
Yes.
Wow.
Darth Vader is motherfucking scary now.
Okay. Well, we're not giving anything away because I'd like to see this.
If you don't know Darth Vader's in the new movie, then congratulations having been under that.
No, I knew
rock.
That.
You know, I'm just saying in general.
Yeah.
I would like to talk about that. I would like to talk about that really quick and say that.
This is something, let me throw this out. Yeah. Because I brought up something, the other night, and you were like, don't say anything to anyone about this.
Because that is not reflected in the trailers whatsoever. I had no idea that was going to happen.
Okay. I think most people probably don't give a shit the way you do about that.
But I was genuinely surprised by it, so I was happy. You know what I mean?
Well, all right. Well, I read an interesting article about this, and I won't mention what it is.
We'll talk about it in the next podcast. How about that? We will come back to this interesting topic that I don't want Smike to talk about.
But I was like, why is this a spoiler? And you, to you it was.
Because to me, if it's in the trailer, it is something you can discuss.
Okay.
If it is not in any way reflected in any of the trailers, to me that is something. So you have to understand, there are significant portions of this movie that I was surprised by.
Okay.
A lifelong Star Wars fan, there were moments where my jaw dropped in a good way.
All right. Well,
so I think what they did with the trailer was they picked and chose their battles in terms of, let's make people feel like we're giving them a lot and then not actually give them as much as they think, which is very rare. Granted, it's also 2 hours and 13 minutes, so it's a little easier to do that when your movie's that long.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, there was like the entire final segment of the movie was fucking jaw-dropping.
Yeah. And we're kind of past that point on the Passengers trailers. Is that the name of the movie, Passengers? The one where they're in space on the...
Oh, yeah, they've gone to giving away plot. Well, you...
It looks like they've really gone...
Melinda really said she saw one that gave too much away. I don't think I've seen that one.
Yeah. But you're right. Point taken. It is rare to be able to go into a movie today and not say, oh, yeah, it's that scene from the trailer. Oh, okay, yeah. I remember when that happened in the trailer.
Well, here's the really funny thing. So you remember all the controversy about the reshoots?
Yes.
So if you're not aware of this, everyone was like, oh, Rogue One's going to suck because they're doing tons of reshoots.
Well, and there is controversy about this. And some people said it was something. Some people said it was nothing.
It was nothing.
Okay.
But what happened was, if you remember the early trailers, there are very specific things that are like iconic almost instantly.
Mm-hmm.
So if you remember, Jin runs down on a catwalk and a TIE fighter rises up slowly in front of her.
Okay.
Like, I was like, holy fuck, that is not in the movie.
Oh.
There are several standout moments from the early trailers that are completely gone because of the reshoots, which is kind of awesome because it's like, holy shit, I've been waiting for stuff that wasn't even in the movie. Like... It totally fucked with my expectations. That's kind of cool.
So you don't feel like ripped off? Like, why? Where was this scene?
Because I saw the movie and I knew exactly what that scene was.
Okay.
Even though it played out completely differently, you still kind of know exactly what happened.
All right.
So it's an interesting thing. But I just want to say generally, I don't want to do a long podcast unless you are...
No, we're doing a straight podcast. That's fine.
Oh, okay. But I do want to say that, so anyone who's listening to this podcast is well aware that I absolutely detest Episode 7. And I'm sure I've talked about this at length, so I'm not going to do it again. It's just really not a good Star Wars movie. And a lot of the issues I had with that, I had the opposite reaction to Rogue One with. Now, I had a good reaction, or I had a good feeling about Rogue One for a very long time.
Yes.
So I understand
that. And this was because of, I think, the director?
I love the director.
It was also... not the tentpole movie, nope. So there was more freedom, I guess, for the director to do their own thing.
Putting my hand on your shoulder and saying he had a lot of freedom.
Okay.
In a way that I've never seen in a Star Wars movie.
And that's one of the things you were anticipating to some extent.
Yes. I did not anticipate the extent that Disney let them go.
Okay.
This is an adult movie, and I don't mean sexually because you'll never get that in Star Wars. But I mean, this is the... How good exactly are the rebels? What is the motivation of people doing stuff? How far are people willing to go for stuff? What is going on internally in the Empire? What is Darth Vader doing before the first original movie? Like, it gets into a lot of territory that I've just never seen done.
All right.
And it did it, you know, maybe the characters aren't as strongly developed as Episode 7 because there's a lot more characters. Right. And it's not that kind of movie anyway. So I'm not as, you know, yes, that is a flaw you could level at this movie.
So there are more characters in this.
Oh, yeah.
More main characters, I guess.
This is basically Star Wars Dirty Dozen.
All right.
Or Ocean's 11 in space is another way I've heard it described.
The Seven Jedi. The Magnificent Seven Jedi.
No, you can't say Jedi, though.
Yeah. Okay.
There's no Jedi in this movie.
The Magnificent Rebels.
Yeah. That's perfect. The Magnificent Rebels. Special effects were fucking amazing. And yes, I'm referring to what you're talking about, amongst many other things.
Okay.
New stuff gets done for Star Wars.
I'm looking forward to Donnie Yen, because...
And Donnie Yen almost steals the movie.
Well, good. He should, because he's fucking awesome.
He's an interesting character in a different way than anyone else in the movie is. But he... He gets a lot of good lines. And Alan Tudyk's robot, K2SO, I think, probably gets the best lines of the movie.
Kind of a throwback to Knights of the Old Republic.
Yes, that sarcastic, moderately psychopathic kind of robot. Yeah, the funny by virtue of being a little too honest, a little too scary.
A little too sociopathic, yes. Psychotic.
Yeah, not the C-3PO. There were multiple tie-ins with the Clone Wars cartoon and Rebels.
Okay.
Which was fucking... And they were throwing...
Oh, that's going to lose me. Maybe I should watch, like, Rebels for a while.
Well, I can tell you right now, because, I mean, it's not ruiny stuff. I haven't seen the Clone Wars stuff yet. I just knew it was happening. But Forrest Whitaker's character, Saw Gerrera, is a Clone Wars character.
Okay.
Which is really interesting. So you start to think about this. So this is cartoons getting legitimized even more in canon by it being in the movie.
Oh, that gives you a nerd on, doesn't it?
No, you know what gives me a nerd on? There is a PA announcement in a scene in Rogue One that calls one of the characters from Rebels.
Okay.
That gave me a nerd hard on, because I was like, that was so subtle, you had to be listening for it. And I heard it, and I was like, oh, shit. Oh, no, you didn't.
Now I have to watch Rebels before I watch this.
Dude, Rebels is really good and dark. Like, darker than Clone Wars. Rebels,
really? Oh, yeah. It didn't look like... I saw, like, some of the first couple episodes.
Yep, I know. And you're like, okay, no. It is def... They're going into awesome territory.
All right.
David Filoni does great stuff with his cartoons, because he did Clone Wars, too. So, yeah. So, final prognosis. You could never watch Rogue One and really not miss anything in terms of the Skywalker tentpole saga movies. But this felt justified, right? That's really the most important thing. Does this weird movie that slots in and tells stuff that you didn't necessarily need to know, does it feel justified? Fuck yeah. And it does. What is different about it is dark, it is mature, it is not black and white. There's very little altruism and that kind of childish, you know, like, understanding of the world. These are adults who are fucked up, doing fucked up things for arguably a greater good. But, yeah.
All right. Let's go a little negative here.
Okay.
I'm gonna do a little dive into negative pop culture here. Okay. So, one of the games that just came out recently, PlayStation 4.
You going back to the Last Guardian?
I'm gonna go back to Last Guardian.
Oh, negative on the Last Guardian.
I've only started playing it.
Uh-huh.
And holy crap. The controls and the camera are just fucking awful. And they take you right the fuck out of the story.
That sucks.
It does. I played it a couple of times and I was like, fuck this game.
Wow.
I'm going to go back. I'm going to get back into it.
Mm-hmm.
But man, when you see the reviews that are saying there are problems with the controls and the camera, they are not fucking kidding. And maybe it's just like, no, I don't remember any issues like this to this extent with Ico or Shadow of the Colossus.
I don't either. No. I mean, I don't recall much at all like that. I mean, the camera was kind of a joy to deal with because you could make it reveal so much.
And you can do that with the camera, but it takes a while. Like, I want to look over here. Come on, camera, get the fuck over there. Come on. You can do it.
The camera should not be your enemy in a game. That is bad design.
Yeah.
That is an overly long development cycle focusing on the wrong shit.
Yeah. And there were like, I'm certainly not giving away any spoilers in this, but there have already been, and I'm like maybe not even a tenth of the way through the game yet. There are key parts where like you have to do this and then jump over to here. And I'm trying to jump over. I can see what I'm supposed to do, but the camera is fucking with me so much that I jump the wrong way and I miss. I'm like, oh, fuck. I can see what I was supposed to do. I knew what I was. I knew it. I had to jump from here to there. And the camera's like, maybe you're going to go this way. I'm like, no, fuck you, camera. I was going to go that way, not this way.
I am a very smart machine. I can tell where you really want to go. I think you want to go over here.
And there was another, that's happened a couple of times. There's one where, like, you have to, you, like, go, this isn't really giving anything away. Nobody cares anyway. I'm going to rant for a second.
The Last Guardian is kind of a game that you don't really, you only ruin the ending, I think.
Yeah. So, You gotta, like, get up to this window way the fuck up on a wall.
Oh my god, spoilers!
Yeah. So you get up to the window, mm-hmm. and you've actually gotta go outside the building.
Okay.
And crawl across the ledge and go back in another window to get to what you need to do.
Okay.
So I'm like, I'm looking out here, I'm like, I think this is what I need to do. But the camera's like, no, we're supposed to be inside the building, not on the outside. I'm like, no, camera, come on. I think we have to do shit on the outside. And the camera's like, no, you want to be on the inside.
Listen. I'm a fucking camera. And I'm telling you, we need to be on the inside of this building. Okay? Listen to me.
No, good. Camera, I can get to the outside. Come on, camera.
Hold on. Let's go outside. Let me look out there. Yo, that's fucking high.
Yes, that's why I need you out there.
I'm a camera. I don't want to go out there.
I need you out here so I don't fucking fall. Come on.
If I go out there, I am going to fall.
Oh, if you come out here, I can see where the fuck I'm going to jump.
Until I fall.
You're not going to fall. You're the camera.
How do I know you're telling the truth?
Fuck you.
And that's when you strangled me.
Yes, and that's exactly how that went down.
I actually have the perfect therapy for you. What? You need to play Uncharted 4. Because that game is perfect with all that ledge stuff and the camera.
Oh, good.
It will be your catharsis. So what you do is you need to play 10 minutes of Last Guardian, like an hour of Uncharted. I am going to write you a prescription. And it is for 1 hour of Uncharted 4 for every 10 minutes of Last Guardian. Here you go. Rip. There you are. That'll be $3,000 for therapy.
And I do have Uncharted 4 because obviously I bought the bundle there.
If you have not played that game for at least an hour, you really cannot poo-poo it because it's really
I haven't played it at all.
But you totally did. Remember the first time I was like, oh, you got to play. You're like, no.
I know, because it's like the free game. It's like, here's this game.
I paid $60 for that free game, motherfucker. I love that game. Go fuck yourself. I paid $60 for every one of those games.
Yeah, but it was free for me, so fuck it, man.
Actually, that is legit. That is absolutely legit. I have never in my life appreciated something that was free as much as something I paid for. I think it's just human nature. Yeah, no, absolutely true. But the problem is that they spent so much time developing, they should have just played Uncharted for a while and they would have got it right.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. But the beast, the Trico or Toriko or whatever the fuck it is, it's really nicely done.
Griffin. Yeah, you say that now.
Yeah.
You heard about what's going to happen with him
later
in the game?
Okay. Not entirely.
All right.
But I'm believing that things will be okay.
I salute your positivity.
let's toast to that. Things will be okay. Even if I have to figure out how to get to an extended ending to get to that okay spot. Or write one myself. Whatever.
Fanfic!
I'm sure there will be plenty of that available. Okay, so I'm going to throw something else out at you.
Oh. Hit me!
This may hit you. This may hit you.
I'm putting a two in front of my crotch. That's what you do in baseball, right? For fastball? Or does that just mean I want to...
I'm not going for the glove. I'm going for the crotch, though.
I just want to be on my dick. Is that what
you want
that
me
means?
To throw the ball at your penis? Is that what you're saying?
That's what they do! I don't know! I'm a camera. I don't understand.
Shut up, camera!
Ow! Stay inside the building.
I needed to do that. Fucking camera. So, controversial statement here. Netflix series suck at doing episodes.
Because they're meant to be binged?
Yes.
Yeah, all right, sure.
That was easier than
I'm not going to argue that. It's Mike, it's 2016. It's almost 2017. The way we consume TV has completely been turned on its head.
All right. Well, okay. I was expecting more of a fight there. But so even shows that we both arguably enjoyed tremendously. And okay. I'm going to throw a couple out there. Stranger Things.
Yep.
Jessica Jones.
Yep.
The episodes... Can you, like, point back to, like, oh, these two episodes are really great? Or no. Is it just, like, I like the whole storyline?
It's an overall experience and narrative, yeah. I'm totally not going to argue this at all. All
right. Whereas because... I could throw back to any of the, like, older TV series that you were a fan of.
Mm-hmm.
Say Buffy or Firefly. And you'd be like, oh, this episode. Or, yep. Oh, these couple episodes were the best.
Because they had air dates.
Yeah.
Netflix doesn't have air dates. The episodes are essentially a formality and like a vestigial presentation model.
And I think, and I'm to be honest, I'm riffing on something that I've read.
I figured.
A Film Crit Hulk review. Oh, yeah.
I have nothing but love for Film Crit Hulk because he beat up on episode 7 so well.
Yeah.
So vehemently and with such erudite tone.
So Film Crit Hulk made a couple of good points that I read recently. And the upshot is that these binging shows, the Netflix shows, the ones that don't, you know, come out actually once a week.
Right, they drop en masse.
The writers have gotten a little lazy on them and have not been writing solid episodes.
Okay.
And that's a weakness in his point. And I'm starting to agree with that. And to the point where, like, yes, in the past, even like shows as recently as like Mad Men or Breaking Bad, people can look back and go, I love this episode and I love that episode. Mm-hmm. You don't get a sense of that from many of these new bingeable, immediately bingeable shows.
I will not argue that, but I will argue, why is that necessary?
We'll think back to your favorite episodes. I mean, it was...
Nope. You're not answering my question. Why in this day and age should they even drop as
You mean why should episodes? They try?
Why should they even bother as separate episodes?
From the perspective of an audience member, mm-hmm. I would like to be able to think, oh, this was a really standout, you know, 50 or 60 minute chunk.
That's still not a reason, though.
I guess. I mean, financially, from their perspective,
they filmed
why
them all
bother? Out. Yeah.
I mean, the only thing I can think of is digestibility.
I guess.
If it dropped as a 12-hour...
It's sad, though, isn't it?
Just postulate it.
A little bit sad.
Just postulate this. If Stranger Things dropped as, what was it, 9 episodes?
Yeah, probably.
If it dropped as a 9-hour movie. I know, it's crazy. I know. But Netflix just remembers where you were and you just pick up where you left off. Would you have the same complaint?
I guess not, but a 9-hour movie would be kind of weird.
Would it? Because you're still thinking in terms of like 10 to 20 years ago. I'm just saying, I don't disagree with you. They are soft episodes. In terms of boundaries, they feel like they're just arbitrary chunks. I get that.
Yeah.
And I agree. But part of me has to say, being someone who really enjoys binging, mm-hmm. on a show, watching and not being allowed to because my wife doesn't like to do it. Although she's been doing it with Gilmore Girls, so I need to hold that against her. You heard me. I'm going to hold that against you and make us binge more. I talked to the mic as if it was my wife there. I'm just saying that as someone who really enjoys binging, sometimes the episodes are like a formality to me.
I think that's sad, though, because when you think about the good shows that
because
you've
seen...
Because
you're in your 40s.
No. I'm talking about more real... Well, not that far back. Like I said...
I'm giving you a hard time. Go on. No, go on.
Breaking Bad, Battlestar Galactica. There were very memorable, very strong episodes that worked as self-contained stories and also advanced the greater story.
So you've never watched a show and thought, rather than just being a standalone thing, I would rather just kept going. The two-parters are way more interesting to me than the single standalones.
Even a two-parter. Actually, there were some shitty two-parters.
Well, there's always shitty. I'm just saying, a good two-parter to me is infinitely more exciting than a single good standalone episode.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Why is that?
As I joked on Facebook, I bathe in the blood of young, complex storyline. It keeps me young. I am 1,000 years old and will never age as long as I have long, complicated storylines that I get to bathe in the blood of. I fucking love to have to be engaged for long periods of time.
Okay.
I love that. I am not every audience member, obviously. But I think that audience members have come a long way, and the concept of binging started with DVDs, right? You binged on... You bought a DVD of a season. That's how I did it.
Okay.
I binged on Arrested Development because I bought all the DVDs and was like, this is fucking amazing. I never want it to stop. Right? It lights up that kind of addictive part of your brain. I'm just saying that you're still approaching this from like the previous model of things have to air individually.
I'm not saying they have to.
No, but they did have
I'm saying that made them better. What was your favorite Buffy episode? Like, all time, wow, that was an amazing episode.
That's cheap. It's a cheap answer because it's the silent episode and the singing episode.
Okay. Yeah. So, even if it's a cheap answer, how are you going to get that with the new format? You're not.
Because they had to find a reason to do those episodes. You could just write that into the show. A demon showed up that made everyone sing. A demon, a bunch of demons showed up that took everyone's
voice. Yeah, but that's not happening anymore because it doesn't just serve the story, the greater storyline.
But I will turn that argument around and say that that also fell in the rather silly Monster of the Week thing that I think.
But you love them. But you're saying those are your favorites.
For those two?
Yeah.
There's about 60 of that are shit. The stupidest X-Files episodes, for the most part, were Monster of the Week episodes.
Okay, that's fair.
Okay?
Yeah.
There are tombs. There's a couple of things that don't adhere to that. There's a couple of really good Monster of the Week episodes. So I'm just trying to provide a counterpoint to this.
Yeah, fine. So you would rather just have solid 9 or 10 connected story-heavy advancing plot episodes than maybe like 26 or so kind of mediocre episodes with like a couple of just stellar ones thrown in.
Yes.
All right.
But I think most people would find that exhausting. You need some B plot. Right? So I think what needs to happen is we need to approach this is a 10-hour movie. We need to give some breaks to the overarching plot. Let's do some B plot. Let's do some side stuff. Let's challenge our writers differently.
Mm-hmm.
Literally just trying to give you a counterpoint here based on what I see is where the industry is going.
All right. Have you watched any more of, oh my gosh.
What was Luke Cage?
Yeah, Luke Cage. No.
We have one episode of Walking Dead left.
Yeah.
Before the midseason. We've wrapped up all of our shows for this new, I'm still convinced Battlestar started this, but this new midseason break. I had never seen this done until Battlestar Galactica did it. This point
but
five
that was
shit.
Like that was like a writer's strike thing, wasn't it?
Initially, but then they kept it going. No, I think you're right. Yeah. But then it became a de facto thing where they did after season 2, 2.5, 3, 3.5. Yeah. So we're almost through. So we look forward to these because it's like we get to pick some kind of show that exists not on television currently, and we get to try to watch the fuck out of it really quick. I'm kind of pulling for Man in the High Castle.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, you want to talk about dense, exhausting, depressing, super thick plot. I mean, that it's almost too much for me. it's a lot. But that's because
be careful
the
what you wish for, I know, right? Michael Carrasco.
We were talking about that at the soccer meetup. It's like it's so much world building. It's like it's you know what it is like? It's like playing a video game and reading every book on every shelf. You know what I mean? It's like you could do that, but how fucking tiring is that?
No, I get that. Because whenever I'm playing like the JRPGs and like you come into the library room and you're like, fuck.
And then you think, do you ever have the thought, you're like, how much of a completionist do I have to be? That is the immediate thought I have.
No, I think about it, but I'm like, nope, I have to. I have to go to every fucking section of bookshelf and read whatever book I'm supposed to read. I do it. I have to.
I think you and by extension of film crit Hulk, I think you're right. I think the art of writing strong episodes is dying. But I really feel like you need to make the counterpoint of, with the exception of maybe Breaking Bad and maybe even Firefly had one or two stinkers. The percentage is really high for how good the episode because it's such a short run. But with the exception of maybe Breaking Bad, and you haven't seen it, right?
I haven't seen all. I've seen like a couple episodes. Which I know it's terrible for me to say that.
Whatever. I mean, you know what?
There's honestly, a lot of stuff out there. But
yeah, it's impossible to keep up with all of it. I mean, there are times where I was like, I could not watch Breaking Bad. It was just too much. It was too much realistic awfulness to take in. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I understand as men get older, we have a higher estrogen count. We get more emotional. I am way more impacted and empathetic than I used to be. It's harder to watch it than it used to be for me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I understand why someone would be like, I don't really want to watch Breaking Bad. I don't want to say anything. But with very few exceptions, most shows, are really inconsistent with their seasons. And like X-Files is a great example because like when the new season
you're going to a new season.
The new season has one standout episode.
Yeah.
And that's the
This is maybe not the best example to use.
No, it is. Because the guy who wrote that wrote my two favorite X-Files episodes of all time. Jose Chung's From Outer Space and someone's final, Frank Bruckman's Final Repose.
Okay.
Those are, I think, I haven't seen every episode of X-Files, but they are possibly two. And most people will say it's in everyone's like top 10 or top 5. Same guy, same writer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like shows that run for a while don't have the same writer the whole time, right?
Right.
And so you get this...
Or even same director.
Rarely the same director. So like even Firefly, which had, I think, the same writers throughout, not everyone same director was all... So you get this up and down shit.
Mm-hmm.
What if we approach TV shows of, let's get a really good fucking writer, let's get a really good director, and let's have them do 10 hours worth of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Maybe that's where we're going. Maybe that's
in
the future.
I think it is. I think what
maybe
you are presaging...
Maybe we can eventually get to a Jessica Jones or a Stranger Things that also gets, hey, let's up the stakes, let's do a fucking musical episode.
And figure out how to tie it into a 10-hour like plot line.
Yeah.
That is not episodic.
Yes.
Necessarily.
But it is episodic.
But, are we talking about the future? I'm confused.
Yeah, we're talking about the future.
Oh, okay. I'm just wondering if that's going to continue.
What, you mean episodes?
Yeah.
Or if it's not just, I hope it does.
When an entire season drops and air dates no longer matter, why do episodes still matter? Look at that from a...
I want them to matter.
Yeah, but you're looking at it from an audience standpoint. You have to look at it from a production standpoint. So look at it...
That's so cynical, though. Can't go there.
Realistic. Okay.
It's realistic.
Oh, you're just an innocent
I'm in dreamland.
Yeah, okay. Like, you're in La La Land.
I want... Well, that's another thing. We haven't talked about La... Well, okay.
Erica really wants to see that movie.
Yeah, that's getting so much buzz.
Mm-hmm.
La La Land.
Yeah, I saw it and I was like, really? But, I mean, Emma Stone and, you know... What's his face? The guy with the abs.
Anyway, neither one of us has seen that. Neither one of us has much to comment on that.
Nope.
But yeah, I would love to have the strong through storylines that you get with a lot of the current Netflix, the bingeable stuff,
mm-hmm.
the immediately bingeable stuff,
mm-hmm.
and combine that with the memorable episodes that we've had from past shows that were on a more extended schedule.
And my counter to that is maybe that had worked for a very long time and maybe produced some very good stuff, but I think you need to look where the market is going, and the market does not support that moving forward. The need is not, it's hard to argue with me if you want, but I think it'd be really hard for us to make a case 10 years from now, why would we have episodes? Seriously, why even do episodes at that point? When you're dropping all your shit at once, there is no need. They filmed Stranger Things like it was a movie anyway.
I know.
Like,
yeah.
I'm just, look, dude, I was in the inside of the industry for like 20 seconds.
No, I get it. I get it.
It's just, have to look at it that way.
I know. I've had a little bit of industry inside myself, a smidge.
I looked and saw that my career path no longer existed because celebrities had taken all the commercials, and I was like, I'm out. Fuck this shit. I'm not actually as good as I thought I was, and I'm fucking, the role I want Channing Tatum's going to get now, so fuck this shit.
But who knows? Maybe in the future, in the not too distant future, that becomes something that differentiates the truly great Netflix or Amazon or Hulu series from,
yes.
You know, oh, Jessica Jones was okay back then, but now we have this awesome, I don't know what it is, series.
I'm looking,
that does all of this stuff.
I'm looking positively. We're in a in-between. We're in a growth phase, an awkward kind of clunky growth phase.
Yeah.
Netflix has utterly turned shit on its head.
Yeah.
Amazon is now doing it. Hulu is doing it, right? We're getting all these original internet-based content that's hitting all at once. It's unheard of, right? 5 years ago, we wouldn't know what to do with this shit. This is really new. So now it's like, well, okay, what is this? This is disruptive. I'm so sick of hearing that term working in the tech industry, but it's extremely disruptive.
It is. It is.
Right, like in the purest sense of the word.
And hopefully, you know, a few years down the line, we can look back at Stranger Things, Jessica Jones, and those are okay for the time that they came out.
But now,
oh my God, this stuff is so much more better. This is so much more evolved and so much more complex and rich and delicious.
It's a holistic experience. I do want to point out that it's still moving in the direction I want, which is TV is getting better and better. It has been the golden age of TV, and it does not seem to be stopping. And that is exciting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and it's purely selfish, I don't get to go to the movies as much as I did by any stretch because I have a kid.
Yeah.
So, like, watching TV has become much more of a mainstay of my life. So the fact that it happened to coincide with TV getting really fucking incredible is fucking awesome for me.
Yeah, There have been various times in the past that we've been saying that.
I think if you look, there are more high-end actors moving to TV. There's stronger writing in TV. There's stronger complexity.
Yeah, but I could have said that like back in the 80s when Hill Street Blues came on.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Hill Street Blues. Did I ever have you read Everything Bad is Good for You?
No.
Well, a friend of mine, the original Buddies in Space collaborator,
mm-hmm.
before you, stole it. I don't think he ever gave it back. There's a really interesting book written by a neuroscientist called Everything Bad is Good for You.
Mm-hmm.
And his argument was the complexity of pop culture is increasing, which is a good thing. As bad as it seems.
Okay.
So
why does that seem bad?
Because he used reality TV as an example.
Oh.
He said, yeah, I know reality TV seems bad, but look at the complexity of Joe Millionaire versus the newer. Like, he was mapping. He actually did mapping in terms of complexity, but he used Hill Street Blues.
Okay.
That was one of his examples of how TV had evolved in complexity.
Mm-hmm.
Character development, number of plot lines, number of plot points you had to retain, you know, as a viewer over a season, that kind of stuff.
Because that was huge. I mean, it was huge when it came out. Hill Street Blues was a complete revolution when it came out.
Right. I'm not talking about one show. I mean, if you're just saying that for one show, I don't think that's a fair assessment.
Well, I think I'm just using it as a point in the past, pretty far in the past right now.
Right. But are you saying TV was really good because of that one show? One groundbreaking show does not a golden age of TV make.
No.
Okay.
No.
There are, I think it's pretty hard to argue that TV is having an outstanding, it's beating Hollywood right now. I mean, it just in terms of just the quality of content. Look at what HBO is doing. Look at what Netflix is doing. Look at Breaking Bad couldn't have existed 10 years ago. Mad Men couldn't have existed 10 years ago. You know what I mean? We're in a state where the subject matter, the acting, the writing and direction, the special effects that TV is capable of doing now, it's pretty big deal. I mean, oh, you don't agree? You're welcome to disagree.
I'll go along with that.
All right. There have been landmark TV series for decades. I'm not arguing with that.
And I think Stranger Things is a landmark. I think Jessica Jones is a landmark.
I do too.
And I hope we got nowhere to go but up from here.
It's pretty exciting.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, let's end on that high note for 2017.
Yeah. So
let's see what we got coming out.
So fuck you to the bad. Thank you for the good. Here's to a stellar new year. And all I ask, and this is the little I'll dip into my politics, is be vigilant. Be conscientious. Don't stick your head in the sand and forget your neighbor, especially if they are minority or gay.
Don't get used to shit.
Do not get used to shit.
Because it's going to be fucking easy to do that.
If you are a white heterosexual, it's going
to be so easy to get used to
the new norm. Here's my New Year's resolution.
All right.
To never leave the house with anything less than a fully charged battery in my cell phone. Because I want to be able to call 911. I want to be able to take video of anything I see. If I feel that my interceding in something puts me or my son or my wife in physical danger, I will whip out my fucking cell phone and live cast that shit on Facebook. No one gets away with shit around me in the coming year. That is my pledge.
Good. Good on you.
And I'm a white guy who's straight and married and has a kid, so I can fucking say that without fear of repercussion. So bully for me. Do you have a New Year's resolution?
Along those lines, just don't get used to shit. Because, like we just said, It's going to be easy to do that.
It's going to be tempting. It's going to be tempting to do that.
It's going to be easy to just throw your hands up and say, well, that's just the way things are.
What are you going
to
do?
Yeah, what are you going to do? You're going to do shit. You're going to call people. You're going to make noise.
I'm not going to accept it.
Yeah, there we go. And with that.
And with that, downer now.
No, I think I'm on, man. I'm that's a positive on.
That is a positive. Two white guys in suburban America saying, fuck you. So just.
Not you. Not
no, not you. No, you're not cool. You're great. You're fine. No, you're fine. You're cool.
Those guys. Fuck those guys.
Everything else, though. That's behind us, because we're both pointing behind us.
We know what we're pointing at. Yeah. It's not you. It's not the assholes.
You know, the assholes.
The assholes.
The motherfuckers.
You know what we're talking about. You know who we're talking about.
You understand. To do the old timey thing with the.
You're just putting your hand there.
On my ear.
You're not actually doing anything.
No, it accomplishes nothing. Buddies in Space is a Stolen Dress Entertainment production. Visit stolendress.com to check out other Stolen Dress podcasts, blogs, tweets, videos, and books. Taking my hat off my ear now.
There you go. Well done.
Thank you.
It's a good way to go out.
Yeah, I think so.
On a positive note.
Yeah. Do you know that Google Home cannot create a fucking calendar event?
Not yet.
What the fuck?
I'm sure it's going to happen. They're coming out with lots of stuff.
I know. But it's like, I got angry at Google Home today. I was like, man, fuck you. Yeah. It also can't reverse the play order on my Spotify playlist. That shit pissed me off.
Reverse the order?
Yeah, so... Eat my brain.